I just don't like how homogenous they feel.
This is going to be a literal money tree.
If you want to brew a deck that was popular 3 months ago.
Google obviously has my number pegged.
You are a real behind-the-scenes nerd. Congratulations.
You're not maybe as stupid as you once thought you were.
Earth-shattering, to be completely honest.
Hopefully before we split the wishbone.
Maybe it's just the old man in me.
Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to this week's offering of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease. He's Brian Tibbetts, and he's the one with the internet fixed. He's Matt Hurley. Your thank you letter to Al Gore, I'm sure, is in the mail. We get it started each week here on Tryhards with what are you drinking? Now that we can talk to you again, Matt, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking New Riff Single Barrel 113 Proof Bourbon. We went to a store opening for one of the other liquor stores here. They opened a second liquor store from where the girlfriend works. There was a lot of high-quality booze there, so I'm continuing the trend. I started at 5:30 today.
That is a high-quality transition that you just made from 5:30 until, what, your time? It's almost 10:30 now as we record this. So.
And I've got a nice 6 a.m. day tomorrow, so that'll be nice.
We'll see how Matt's contribution kind of wobbles through this episode. Of Tryhards. It was a busy day for me today, so I wanted something refreshing. Got the Boulevard Single Wide IPA here in the studio. I think I've made a good choice. It's delicious so far. Brian, what are you having?
I am enjoying an Elysian Night Owl Pumpkin Ale. Lakefront Pumpkin out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, probably has kind of the king of the pumpkin ales. Just absolutely delicious. Used to drink that on a Halloween bike ride I used to go on many, many moons ago. But this one's really, really good. It's not overwhelming. Doesn't taste like somebody's got, like, you know, a fistful of pumpkin pie and is trying to shove it into your face. The leaves have finally fallen. It's raining here. It's finally cold. And that's just the perfect beer for this evening in West Central Illinois.
Now, we hope you've got something delicious as we get this episode of Tryhards fully powered and underway. What magic did you guys play this week? Brian, you're in the middle of transitioning your life to a new location. Has that left you any room to play Magic?
I did get to play some Magic this week, and much to my dismay, it actually worked out. There was a Legacy tournament that the shop Trademark up in Moline has been trying to do for a while now. They're trying to do like a Legacy tournament once a month. My buddy Eric and I grabbed our decks and headed on up Sunday morning, and we were one of five who showed up for this. And the funny thing is four of the five came from out of town to play in this Legacy tournament, which did not fire since there were only five of us. So us from Galesburg, which is about 45 minutes away. One guy was from Muscatine, which is about an hour. And the other guy came from Durant, which is kind of going towards Iowa City, maybe another 35, 40 minutes. So it was kind of funny to kind of say, huh, we thought there would be more Legacy. And everybody's like, yeah, well, some people play, but most of it's modern. So it's just kind of one of those things. However, we didn't fire the tournament, but we did just hang out and play Legacy, which was really fun. A couple of the guys had multiple decks, so was able to get in the reps against multiple decks and basically just had a big playtesting session. And Sebastian, Alex, and Keith, really cool guys. We went out for wings and stuff and beers afterwards with Sebastian and Alex and just kind of talked metagames, talked community and stuff like that. So it was really good. Overall, the Mono Blue Painter deck did not perform as well as I would want it to. It seemed to draw pretty poorly, even when I had cantrips going, even when I had counter magic going. I just could not assemble the combo to save my life as often as I would want to. What seemed to happen was, as my opponent kind of knew I was going for the combo, that's when they would just kind of keep up a counter spell to keep me off the combo. War of Invention became kind of like target number one. I think I might have resolved two Words of Invention all afternoon, and I cast that card quite a little bit. They just kept countering it, you know, dazing it, Force of Will, Fluster Storm, Bell Pierce, you name it. It just kept being the target. Didn't really draw my Enlightened Tutors at all either. I kept digging for them, trying to think that was going to be another win condition, and it just wasn't. Sideboarding was interesting. I had switched out some sideboard cards. I'd brought in some things. I brought in the Rip Helm combo against one, and I was playing against Rug Delver at one point, gentlemen, and this is just kind of like how my afternoon went. I had a Rest in Peace in play. I had a Back to Basics out against Rug Delver, as you know. Just could not seal the victory. And it was just one of those things. I'm like, God, I cannot draw my combo pieces. So I've got him like all tapped down and then just gave him enough time to kind of get back into the game, you know, get a mongoose in play. And he just kept beating me down with mongoose until I just was dead. So, yeah, it was pretty frustrating overall. If there's one thing that those testing sessions are good for, it's to kind of show you, huh, maybe I should just, you know, go another route. And guys had some great ideas. They had some ideas because I told them about the blue-white helm deck out there with the energy field and stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, try that one. And then my buddy Eric was just a little bit more blunt, was kind of like, yeah, why don't you just play something like Mentor in Miracles? Because that seems like your deck and you're probably going to be pretty good at it. And I'm like, thanks, Eric. But overall in the afternoon, it was pretty much Eric smashing people's faces in with Storm. He's just really good with the deck and got a lot of play with it. So it's good to just see good players play and to see a bunch of different decks. So yeah, overall, a good afternoon.
You mentioned that you had Rest in Peace in play when you were trying to lock out that Rugdelver opponent. That means that goose was beating you down for one each turn and you weren't able to get that.
The goose was loose for one.
Ugh. Yep, the goose was getting blocked. I was able to put a Painter's Servant out at one point, and so the goose was no longer attacking, and then he was able to abrade my servant and then get in for the one, and I just could not seem to find the combo pieces to put either Grindstone or another Painter's Servant into play. It was pretty sad, not going to lie.
The slowest, most painful death possible.
Beat down by Noble Hierarch is the slowest, most painful.
Glad I wasn't beaten down by that green creature. It was just another green creature that took it.
Matt, did you get to play any Magic this weekend?
Did not play any paper Magic. I got to actually record a couple of videos with the Bug Modern list. I should have those posted up tomorrow, which is Wednesday. Haven't even had a chance to do much drafting in Guilds of Ravnica, even though it's a couple times I've done it. It was a ton of fun.
Brian, I feel like I owe you an apology. I was supposed to be on that trip, but I don't think six would have made it an official tournament either.
We were debating that when I brought up the idea that, you know, we might have had one more. And then it turned out that everybody seemed to be planning on bringing another guy. So, you know, at some point we had the theoretical eight, but, you know, so be it. It was still an okay time. If we have six again, I bet they'd actually probably fire it. But for a buy-in of like $10, $15, that seems like a reasonable way to fire that tournament anyway.
Yeah, I ended up filling up my time. Arena had Dominaria drafts on Blue Light Special. So I loved that format, and I went back and played some of those. It didn't go very well for me, and I am sick of the Boros Pants deck. I just got beat down by that thing repeatedly, it seemed like, over the weekend. So if you're putting an aggressive enchantment on some white creature, I'm just going to have flashbacks to what happened to me, it seemed like, all weekend long.
Sean, I had 3-7-2s on Arena Dominaria draft, so maybe you're just a bad player.
That could be, because I don't think I won more than three games in any draft that I did, and I did a handful of them. It was a struggle.
I gotta give them props on Arena, but they're putting some interesting stuff out there. It's been a ton of fun. I'll post a picture on the Patreon as well of where I finally got my Raspberry Pi all set up so I can actually play Arena on my TV in my living room. They're doing a lot of interesting stuff with Arena, and I'm a big fan of it.
Ixalan draft. I remember that format fondly. You want to go back?
Yes.
Let's hurl dinosaurs at each other again.
I was
good at that.
And hell, you can do that in Standard at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're going to talk about that right now. GPs turn their attention back to Standard for the first time in a long time. Brian, you're going to get us started as we went to France for the first real in-depth look at this new format.
1,339 players showed up in Lille, France, to sling Standard spells at each other. And I will say quite a few dinosaurs seem to be in the room, Sean, so that was great. First of all, I do want to give a shout-out. There were 45 players who scored 0 points in the tournament, and none of them were from the United States. So, guys, there's even bad Magic players over in Europe. Rest assured, you're not alone. Etienne Boussin, mono red, took down Gabriel Nassif's mono blue tempo deck, and he also had to get by Javier Dominguez Golgari midrange to get there. So this is definitely a good mono red deck. And the mono red deck, this was only one of two copies in the top 25. There was another one at 25, and there was one at 1. So it just kind of bookended the entire top 25 with mono red. The rest of the 25 deck lists were made up of primarily Golgari midrange and Jeskai control. There was some of the Izzet Phoenix decks showing up, some of the Selesnya Tokens decks showing up. Two Jeskai control in the top eight, one Izzet Phoenix, a Selesnya Tokens, two Golgari midrange, and as I said, the mono red and the mono blue rounded out that top eight. For a deck of a little bit of spice, there was one Boros Weenie deck at 22nd by Makis Matsoukas, and a 23rd place Steel Leaf Stompy deck if you want to brew a deck that was popular 3 months ago. I'm seeing just a ton of Arclight Phoenixes running around. I'm seeing a ton of Izzet, a ton of Doom Whisperer and Golgari. There was nothing that really stood out to me because I feel like this is a standard format that has really cemented itself with those three decks. And I'm curious to know if you think that there's going to be another player that can really maybe knock one of those three off the top pedestal, Sean.
I think it's going to be interesting how this continues to develop because with the diversity of aggression that we're seeing right now, aggression and recursion, it's been really hard for the would-be control decks to pinpoint what threats they have to fight. And control's at its best when it can predict its threats. Between the Golgari decks that are just recurring everything and getting value every time they turn a land sideways, and then the red decks proving to be even more resilient with the addition of Experiment, now it's hard to really predict where you're going to get your control edge from. So until that becomes predictable, it really feels like sort of the wild, wild west, as a couple people have called it. You can do anything. It almost feels like Legacy, as long as it's powerful and leans toward proactive. And that's really difficult world for control decks to deal with. I don't know if the Tokens deck comes back around. I don't know if we see Boros Angels, which is going to have a big weekend when we get to New Jersey, if we see it continue to rise to the top. But with this wide variety of power really splashed everywhere, it's going to be really tough, I think, for anything to stay on top.
Hurley, what about you? Are you looking to Teferi deck's going to be basically living in this Jeskai control shell? Arclight Phoenixes are going to be living in the Izzet Phoenix shell? And then everybody else just kind of has to come get that and the Doom Whispers? Or do you foresee some other decks maybe rising up?
So I think that I would say eight decks that are good enough to win, maybe more. I actually all week watched Gabriel Nassif play through a bunch of decks, and he played a ton of decks that were 85% of the way there. Even he said, he's like, man, this deck's good, but it's got this bad matchup, or this deck's good, but it's just missing one piece type of thing. Wow, is this standard format fantastic? Arclight Phoenix is one of the more powerful cards, and I gotta say, I just missed it when I was looking. I'm like, oh, this looks interesting, this looks powerful, but hell, it's even making a splash in Modern and Legacy as well. I mean, that card is powerful.
I'm really impressed with how people have kind of come to these Izzet decks and just kind of how finely tuned they really already are. And the Jeskai Control list also, I feel like they've taken the best elements out of the control list that we've seen from maybe Esper Control and from, you know, just kind of the blue white control decks of the past 6 months and really just kind of jammed it into a lot of these decks. When you've got the Crackling Drakes, you've got Teferi, you've got the Search for Iskanta, and then backed up by Deafening Clarion, Star of Extinction, a Niv-Mizzet, Hurley, which I know is a card, you know, that you really like. There's a lot of brew stuff that can happen. And Chemist's Insight is a card that I think is really, really going to make a splash and keep these Jeskai decks on the top. That card advantage reminds me a lot of what Glimmer of Genius did during Kaladesh block.
You've got Chemist's Insight doing that, but you also seem to have this in-house family split over whether or not to play Expansion Explosion. Some people believe it's just too mana intensive. Other people believe it's the second coming of Sphinx's Revelation. So I think this has been interesting to watch as the control mages go back and forth, as you have half of the room really saying this is the end all be all and half of them going, I can't even put that in my deck.
I've seen one or two deck lists I saw had three, which to me does seem like a stretch unless you're just going to kind of rely on the expansion and not the explosion. But I mean, obviously that's the more powerful side of that card. I think that's definitely one to build around. I remember a few weeks ago we were talking about Ionize and how that card could really maybe be the card that puts control back on the map. I think we missed it. I think it's Expansion Explosion, to be honest with you.
Brian, let me ask you one thing here. If you had the time I think this looks like one of the best standard formats we've had in years. To me, when Immortal Sun is a card that is a key card in a ton of decks, that just screams to me, this is like kind of like a mid-range fest that is true mid-range so that either control can beat on it or, you know, aggro can beat on it. Is this standard format screaming to you saying, I wish I had more time to play?
Absolutely, because there's nothing I would rather do than sleeve up this list of is it cards, basically, with a little splashing of white for Teferi and things like Deafening Clarion. It just looks like so much fun casting Crackling Drake, you know, drawing cards, Justice Strike, Essence Scatter, Disdainful Stroke, jump starting with Chemister's Insight, and then if you're able to, you know, cast an Expansion Explosion. To me, this is like right in my wheelhouse of things I would like to be able to do. So yeah, I would love to maybe make it down to an FNM, which has been mostly Modern here at the shop lately. But I know the Saturday Showdown, a lot of guys are running in Is It Colors. So just to go down there and kind of see how the decks are playing out, or maybe be lucky enough to borrow a deck, God forbid, that would be a ball. I'd love to just get in on this and see if it's as good as everybody says it is. And I have every reason to think that that's probably true.
We'll have our TryHards interns push a fainting couch up behind Brian in case he gets to wake up thinking about those possibilities. While he refreshes himself, let's jump into Jersey quickly. Standard GP there, 1,212. That was your number for the weekend, 63 of which went home without a point to their name for their efforts. Eli Cassis on the blue, white, red control list that Brian was talking about defeated Brad Nelson. Nelson on Boros Angels. How good is this deck? The entirety of the Peach Garden Oath took Nelson's word and played the Boros Angels list. So this is a real mid-range format, as you were mentioning, Matt, when Boros Angels continues to be a threat in this format. Rest of the top eight, two more blue, white, red control decks, two green, white tokens, a Boros Mentor deck, and an Is It Phoenix deck. And then in the most popular slots at 9 through 32, you had green, white mid-range and green, black mid-range, each with five copies in that 9 to 32 place. So this is, as Matt said and as Brian said, a standard format that is wide, wide open. There is one downside to that. It is hard to try and beat the format when it's so wide open. It feels a little bit like Modern at this point, where you can play anything, but you can't beat everything. And you have to hope to sort of dodge some of your bad matchups in the room. We'll see if Standard continues to remain this way, or if some innovation comes along. The Pro Tour is coming up, and we'll be doing our pick-ems next week. We'll see how Standard stands after that showcase in the Magic world. Matt, you mentioned that you're still getting ready for your SCG Invitational. Glad they haven't rescinded your invite, or else your input on this podcast would be all for naught, really, for the last couple of months.
Screw you guys.
In Charlotte, SCG had a Modern Open, and I know you were pretty tuned into this one.
Yeah, I watched as much of this as I could. We had 450 players on the nose for this Modern Open. It turned out to be a Amulet Titan kind of day. I should say Titan Shift, Amulet Titan. We had Will Pulliam actually take it down at first. And first, second, third place, we had essentially Titan, Titan Shift, Amulet Titan. So Titan, you know, go big. Austin Robbins took second with Becky Edelman, she has been a huge proponent of Titan Shift. And she ended up taking third. Rounding out the top eight, we have Azorius Control, fourth place, Storm in fifth, sixth with Jund. And, I mean, these are just big names here. Fifth at Storm was Caleb Scherer. Sixth was J.D. and Comparins. Seventh, we had Bad Spirits. And eighth, we had Is It Wizards. So it was pretty diverse. Down through the top 32, there's some very interesting decks in here, and there's some names in here. Zan Syed was first or second known with Cat Light as the Banned Spirits player. I mean, we had Ross Merriam with Dredge at 16th. Arclight Red, I think, was kind of the talk of the tournament, because these are the Arclight Phoenix, the four of Arclight Phoenix, four of Bedlam Reveler, and four of Monastery Swift Spear, with a ton of Mana Morphos, Lightning Bolts, Fiery Tempers, those types. Very interesting to watch. Tons and tons of Titan running around. Brian, did you get to watch any of this? Did you see anything that just tickled your fancy?
We have seen kind of the the replacement deck for Mardu Pyromancer and the best Bedlam Reveler deck out there is obviously the Runaway Red or the Arclight Red decks. They're just utilizing the graveyard so much faster. They're, you know, eschewing all of the kind of hand disruption spells and that sort of nonsense. No more Lingering Souls, just straight out burn and efficiency, which I think is quite fascinating. And I think that would be a really good choice for a modern deck right now.
What I'm interested in is this the format that we're actually going to get the most out of Experimental Frenzy? It's the rage right now in Standard. Matt, it's a 4-mana enchantment that doesn't do anything for you the turn it comes into play unless you have extra mana to spend. But the spells that you get in Modern are so much more powerful on a per mana spent basis that the ability to, quote, go off in Modern seems like it would be even more powerful than what we see the red deck doing with Experimental Frenzy in Standard. Is this ultimately where we see Experimental Frenzy sort of be at its best?
The more I see an Experimental Frenzy play, the more I'm like, wow, that card is busted. I don't know where it's at its best. I've even played around, and of course, this is Matt Hurley playing around, not, you know, some master brewer. No, I'm no Jerry Thompson, obviously, but is Experimental Frenzy good in, like, a control deck where you can get, you can control the top of your deck? I think any format where top would be legal, which is basically none at this point, but any top style effect where you can control the top, man, could you imagine Experimental Frenzy counterbalance and top in Legacy? I think that would be a real deck, and I think it would just be earth shattering, to be completely honest.
Yeah, what has me thinking about that is a Grixis control deck where you can utilize the repetitive Jace Brainstorm with Experimental Frenzy. It might be too clunky considering you're talking about 2 4-mana permanents needing to be in play together, but if you're just going to play the Grixis control style deck that we see right now, being able to go so much deeper, being able to play Brainstorm off the top to set up continuous off the top plays just seems like it would be absolutely busted. So we'll see where this makes its biggest impact as it goes forward. I think the card we're going to be talking about the longest from Guilds of Ravnica might be Experimental Frenzy. There's a big one coming up this week, guy. A year ago, we were going to Pittsburgh this week for Eternal Weekend. If you were going to be playing Legacy in Pittsburgh this weekend, what decks would you play? Brian, you were just in a large pig pile of Legacy technology this weekend. What deck would you be playing this weekend?
You know, there's a few choices that I would go to, I think. I have to say the resiliency of kind of the Grixis control list I like, but I would probably opt to do something like a Grixis Delver. I feel like it can get out ahead of people very, very quickly with the addition of Bitter Blossom in that deck. I think that's kind of, you know, where I would go to take that down. If I was going to play some kind of a fast kill deck and I was good at it, I think Storm is always a good choice. Eric kind of has me convinced that that is just one of the most resilient decks. It always has duress when it needs duress. It seems like it always has Thoughtseize, and you're never at a loss for cantripping because it runs 12 of them. It just does what it does, and it does it really, really well. I like those two decks. If I was going to play something maybe a little bit more controlling, I think Miracles is probably where I would go to, but I would want to get a few reps in with that. Hurley, would you dig deep into your box and go with Food Chain like you did last year? Yeah, you put up some good results, as we all know. Or would you do something a little bit more mainstream, shall we say?
If I was going just to, you know, just to have fun, purely just saying, essentially throwing, you know, $75 down the toilet, I would throw a colorless 12-post deck out that I love. I'd borrow some candelabras from somebody and call it a day. I think the deck I would probably want to play would be the Golgari Depths deck. I think that's one of the more powerful ones right now.
Yeah, I would have to say that Golgari Depths deck would be near the top for me. If you told me I couldn't play Reanimator for the weekend, it would be either the Golgari Depths deck, or I think Burn might be in a good spot again in the metagame. I would really look hard at a Burn deck if I was going in there this weekend. Guys, Magic has been front and center with creators on its newest digital platform of late, talking about Arena. This last week, Wizards announced that streamer events and playing with friends, you would think that would be a big draw, would both soon be added to MTG Arena. quote, we want to promote our creators in new ways and celebrate them amongst our player base. We want to do that in a way unique to Magic, and to accomplish just that, Wizards says, we're excited to announce the start of custom events built around creators in the community. They're called streamer events, and they kicked it off this weekend with Day 9, Sean Plott's Insta-Ban. No, he didn't ban specific cards, just banned instants. He has a famous hate for instant speed tricks. So if you wanted to play Magic without instants, I think they call that intro decks, but you got to play that this weekend. Gabby Sparks had the Gabby's Greedy Draft with Dominaria. I thought it was interesting, Matt, you were well documented on this podcast on how poor of a job Wizards does promoting their top Magic players when it comes to Pro Tours, World Championships. They don't build personalities, and they don't promote those top-level pros in order to help sell the game. Are you refreshed that they seem to be taking that bent with creators on Arena? Or is this something that we're going to say, you got to do this with your top pros, and until you do that, it's not going to be enough?
I think they're doing a hell of a job. They mentioned this week, and Sean, I'm sure you're going to mention this later, but they mentioned this week that they haven't even started marketing for Arena this yet. They're marketing for Arena already. I mean, like, if we were at a 2 before, they're at a 10. I mean, I see banners for it. I see people talking about it. I see them sponsoring players to play, and it'll be 6 a.m. in the morning on the East Coast, and they'll have 10,000 people watching. They are doing a much better job with this. I think that they're targeting – right now they're targeting Arena towards the more – I'm not going to call it casual, but non-enfranchised players to draw in more players. I think by using Sean Plott, by using Gabby, that Gabby draft I did, it was fun as a one-off. You know, it's kind of like doing a chaos draft at your FNM. It was fun as doing once or twice. You're just like, huh, this is ridiculous. Could you ever do it, replicate it? No, but if you keep doing fun stuff like that, you're promoting these not super professional, but, you know, well-known Magic names. This is what you have to keep doing. I just hope that they continue to do it down the line, and in a year we continue to see this, and it just isn't all the hype that they have at the beginning, because frankly, if they keep doing this, this is going to be a literal money tree for them. They can just walk out and pick money off, and that's nothing but good for it. If all of a sudden Wizards goes from a $300 or $400 million company to a $1 billion company, because that just means better everything for Magic.
Some of the streamers they've already announced they're going to be working with in the very near future: Amazonian, Professor Knox, Thundermoe Hellkite, Kreparian, and Brian Kibler. Apparently he's got some free time and we're going to be good to go. I can almost see it. Dragons only is the format that Kibler is going to come up with. Brian, you're a creative sort. You're a content creator. If you were allowed to make your own quirky format for Arena, you have any ideas what that would look like?
To think about playing Magic with, like, no instance, you know, just seems crazy to me, but it would be a whole lot of fun. I could see a format where it's like not doing it by rarity, like a pauper thing, but maybe like a casting cost more in the line of the epic card game where everything has to cost like 0, 1, or 2. You can have no cards that are, you know, above that. It's got to be 0, 1, or 2 casting costs. I think that would be actually kind of fun to see how it goes. I would have no idea if that would even work, but hey, let's give it a shot.
I think they just call that Tiny Leaders. And again, you're still trying to bring it back. Matt, any ideas what you could do with a quirky format?
I don't even know what mine would be. All 8 drops? I don't know.
All 8 drops. All 8 drop legendaries. That's great.
They've already run the Momir Vig format on there, so people have fun with that too. My quirky format would be Legacy, but then they'd have to program all those cards in.
I hate to say it like this, but if they can figure out a way to make, you know, the combos and the all the triggers work for Legacy, I would much rather play Legacy on Arena than I would Magic Online.
I think a lot of people would agree with you on that front, but I do have an idea for a format. Feel free to steal this one, Watsy, or any other creator. You guys know I love Planeswalkers. This has been something that they had featured in introductory games in the past. Have a game where you actually have Planeswalkers sort of shifting in and out on both sides. There could be a random die roll. There could be a spin of a wheel where during your battle, you could pre-pick, like, I want these five on my team, and then they would, like, shift in and out, and you wouldn't know which one you're getting for the turn, if any. Maybe in some situation, they would stick around for two turns. I think that would be really interesting, because obviously all the standard planeswalkers are programmed in already. You would just need a way to generate a response table, quote-unquote, from them to see if they would show up for your turn that turn.
I'm thinking, Sean, of from the unstable set, like the cranking. Like, yes. You know, you can crank and get a planeswalker to come in on a certain turn and then, you know, activate its abilities. And after, like, it's in for three turns, it goes away. So therefore, nothing could ever ultimate, but you could pick your planeswalkers based on that. So I really like that idea. I think that's actually pretty cool. Or like you said, there's some pre-determined ways they can come in if they meet certain conditions. But yeah, that sounds actually like a ball.
It's great that we're having a discussion about what quirky, unique stuff can we do versus when are they going to fix the format so this program doesn't crash on me 50 times. I think that's already a huge step in the right direction, and the game's not even released yet.
I have been getting the "you've been disconnected from the server" message more often lately than I ever remember in the past. But if that's because they have increased numbers, I'm willing to live with that. Just a quick reconnect, and I've never had it ruin a game for me.
When you do 100 million games, because that's what they announced days ago, 100 million games, I'm okay with a few small bugs like that.
Speaking of small things, the top community request for Arena continues to be the ability to find a friend and play. I know this is at the top of my list as well. It's called Direct Challenge, and Watsy says, Brian, it's coming, quote, soon. How soon? Well, hopefully before we split the wishbone for Thanksgiving. Essentially, you and your friend would open the Direct Challenge option. You type in each other's username and five-digit code, you hit battle, and then you play a match against each other. Woot. Okay, that still sounds a little clunky to me, Brian.
I'm so reminded of kind of the challenges that they have now at GPs. Yes, GPs, not Magic Fest. Where you just find a player, you sit down, and you play. What are those called? Turbo Challenge or Turbo Town or whatever. You just kind of sit, find a player that has the same ticket, any format. You sit down, you play. Winner gets certain X amount of tickets, loser gets X amount of tickets, and you just kind of rinse and repeat. That kind of one-off thing, I feel like, is maybe geared toward those people who are entering certain formats, and they just want to kind of have that first taste of competition, you know, maybe sit down and play and say, okay, maybe I'll like this, maybe I'll do some more of this, maybe not. They don't want to pay for the four-round, five-round kind of thing. I don't really get into that. I would rather... Maybe it's just the old man in me. I would just kind of rather commit the time and see how I do over a multiple match scenario as opposed to just a one match. Too many things can go wrong to kind of lean on the results of that for any kind of data.
We'll see how Wizards continues to implement those improvements going forward with Arena. Technically, still in the beta, so remember that when you're looking at these things. Well, from digital cards to physical cards, there's a big change coming. October of 2018, where we're at right now, this is the 10-year anniversary of the Wizards Play Network. If you knew that, you are a real behind-the-scenes nerd. Congratulations. The WPN has been an evolving process across its 10-year history, says Wizards, and the latest step in that evolution is going to be Magic Weekend, a rotating, quarterly, mid-season event. Magic Weekend, according to Wizards, will be less of an event than it is a, quote, category of events. Think of it like Battle Bond or Conspiracy. They happen once a year, and they're different each time around. So Magic Weekend is the in-store play equivalent of those sets. Wizards says it will be their space to experiment once per season with new ideas, new formats, and even prizes. And it's going to be a more casual experiment. There are events for players who want a social experience, Matt, for players who want a competition, and for players who want something in between. But what about those who want flavor? What would that look like? What would that format be, says Wizards? What prizes should we be sending to stores? Well, we're going to find out with Ravnica Weekend, Guilds of Ravnica Magic Weekend, coming up November 9th through 11th. There's going to be casual four-pack drafts. There's going to be guild kit battles and D&D sessions. Remember, they've got the new Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica as Hasbro is crossing over between two of its most popular and successful properties, Magic and Dungeons & Dragons. Are you excited about this? By the way, the last sentence tagged on to this, the Core Set 2019 Store Championship was actually the gravestone for the Store Championship series. Okay, I use the word gravestone. That was the last. Those were the last of their kind. Was that a good series to end, Matt? And are you excited about a new, more casual world?
See, I like that they're playing with the format a little bit, because it was always hard to fire those store championships. I'm still a big proponent where if they printed really, really worthwhile cards, and they tried them. They had the guild packs with the double-sided lands that made the Ixalan map. That was a nice way to try and draw some people out. You know what? Make it more casual, make some fun stuff, and maybe it'll drag people out. Problem is a lot of enfranchised players are like us, have one or two people or one or two nights that they can potentially go out and say, oh yeah, I'm going to play Magic, and that's it. Looking forward to what they do in the future. You know, this is not a huge blow like it was to get rid of the F&M foils like they did for a while there. That was just a terrible idea, but you know, getting something new out there and being able to play some new format that's really super casual, super fun. Hey, more power to you.
Brian, which of these prizes would be most likely to draw you out? Full art foil rares, playmats, guild prints, foil guild lands. I think foil guild lands for me would probably be number one.
Yeah, foil guild lands seem pretty sweet. I just love lands in different iterations, you know, just kind of identifying artwork and things like that. Foils overall aren't really my bailiwick, but when they do foil lands really well, I feel like that stands out. And so, yeah, I'd be totally all over that.
All right, enjoy your casual Magic weekends if you're not heading down to the MF-er. The other piece of news Watsy dropped on us this week, the 2018-2019 Pro Tour Team Series rosters have dropped. Okay, that's great. We're not going to go over all 39 teams that are going to be competing in this next iteration of the Pro Tour, but I do have some problems with this, Matt. Number one, events taking place after March of 2019 don't even have formats assigned. Maybe not a worry if you're a pro team member and you know you're going to be playing, so once they announce the format, you'll just get to work on it. And two, we don't even know what's scheduled after that. They being Wizards, can totally avoid the annual pro player panic that breaks out once the new schedule is announced. They should be instead announcing the schedule for 2021 or maybe even 2022 and already have the next couple years on the books. Is WotC ever going to get that organized?
I hope they do. A lot of enfranchised players like us who can go out to one, maybe let's call it a legacy GP. Which legacy GP is it? You know what we have to ask off. I can do about 3 or 4 months at the shortest. A lot of people, it's 6 months with your teaching. What do you need? Heads up for what? 4 months minimum?
Yeah. Well, just for kind of planning it and, you know, asking off and just kind of scheduling myself. Yeah, I would say 3 to 4 months.
I don't know why this is. I'm going back on my soapbox. I don't know why this is so hard for WotC. I understand what they're trying to do. They want to balance out. Say, okay, you know what? Maybe this format's not so good, so we'll go back to, you know, a team or something like that. Yeah, that's great, but you got to give people at least 6 months. At least.
We'll see if WotC continues to add these events further into the future or whether we're all going to be just waiting for a quarterly reveal. Sometimes that feels like the reverse of a Christmas present, when you're waiting for it that close to the occasion. Well, one Christmas gift that might keep on giving is the Giving Tree that is the digital incarnation of new money for Magic, and that is the Arena platform. Matt, you mentioned that Wizards had their earnings call, and Hasbro as well, in the last week or so, and we've got a few things we can divine from this.
Magic was up. Dominaria sold fairly well. Magic 2019 sold fairly well, and there was massive hype going into Guilds of Ravnica. Some of the things that were kind of hidden between the, reading between the lines there, this is the first full standard format that play design had in shaping the entire thing, and I think it shows in this standard format. I mentioned it earlier, 100 million arena games played. That's a hell of a lot of Magic games played. And they also said that marketing hasn't even started for Magic Arena yet. I mean, we already have the funny Day 9 Danny Trejo video. I see banners. Now, granted, I search a lot for Magic online, so Google obviously has my number pegged. But I see banners for Magic Arena all over the place. I see more marketing for this, like I said earlier, than anything else I've seen that Wizards has done ever. And I can only imagine what they're going to do moving forward to grow Magic Arena. Nothing but positive for the game, because, yes, there's a lot of people saying Magic Arena is not for the enfranchised player, you know, the player who wants pro experience. But guess what? If we're 5% of the population, that other 95%, if you grow that by even a few percentage points, that's millions of players. And I just can't get over how awesome Magic Arena is, how they're adding in features on the fly, how they're doing all, everything. I mean, there's stuff they could do better, but you know what? This is a huge step up for WotC, and it showed during that earnings call when they were talking about data collection. They were talking about, hey, here's what we're doing moving forward.
It's interesting. There's a whole generation of new players now who were taught by Machete how to play their Gigantosaurus on turn three. So we'll see where this generation leads Magic in the future. That leads us right up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt, you don't just have one card with you this week. You've got boxes and boxes of stuff. What's going on in the elevator?
Boxes of Guild of Ravnica. There is 13 cards that are eternal playable within Modern and Legacy. Boxes are still in the $90 range on eBay. Expected value is $111 currently. Guild of Ravnica is just going to be knocking out of the park as far as expected value. Pick them up anywhere under $90 or $90. Even at $100, if you get that promo, is a hell of a steal at this point.
Matt's elevator taking him all the way to the money truck as he has Guilds of Ravnica booster boxes this week in the elevator. That brings us to 3 minutes to brew. Brian, what are we brewing with this week?
The set that Hurley was just talking about, Guilds of Ravnica, and one of the cards that I think is maybe a little undervalued, might be seeing some gains pretty soon here on the money side, but we're not interested in that in 3 minutes to brew. We're interested in what we're going to brew around this. Planeswalker, Ral, Is It Viceroy. This is a 5-mana Planeswalker, 3 generic, 1 blue, 1 red, comes in with a loyalty of 5. Card text is +1, look at the top 2 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the other into your graveyard. For -3, Ral deals damage to target creature equal to the total number of instant and sorcery cards you own, in exile and in your graveyard. Emblem, at -8, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, this deals 4 damage to any target, and you draw 2 cards. It's a known quantity now because it's been going into some of these Jeskai decks as kind of a partner with Teferi. Hurley, do you think that this could function in another kind of standard deck, possibly another more aggressive blue-red Is It type deck? Or do you think he's going to be in kind of that supporting role going forward?
When I first looked at this card, and you can go back in the Wayback Machine and go back to the original episode, I thought this was a pile. I was wrong. This goes into any deck that plays blue with a splash of red or red with a splash of blue. But it does play a support role in those decks. A great new design on Planeswalkers. And all the Planeswalkers we've seen moving forward, and I think this is play design, they really are kind of, they're not necessarily build-arounds. Teferi's the standout there where it's just all around good. It's cards that are like really good in certain decks. They're not just generally awesome, and they're not just, you know, in a very narrow lane. I actually like these in the Is It decks that are running Crackling Dyrrhachs and Niv-Mizzets with maybe as like a 1 or 2 of, because you go from that 4 to that 6 fairly easily. And in those decks, his -3 is doing like 5 damage, 6 damage, somewhere in there. So pretty much killing anything that's not a Carnage Tyrant. I actually really like Ral, but he's one of those cards that he's going to be a supporting character as a 1 or 2 of.
Sean, are you as high on Ral Is It Viceroy as Hurley was down on it at the beginning and has since come around?
The problem that I have with Ral is that he He feels familiar. Five mana planeswalker, plus give you extra resource, minus take care of problem, limit break, win the game. That sounds like Teferi. That sounds like Vivian Reed. That sounds like Rao. If playtest is truly putting their stamp on these new planeswalkers, I think we found a mold that they like. And yeah, they're all in different colors, but they all do effectively the exact same things for the exact same cost and come in with the exact same loyalty. I'm really kind of having a hard time telling these things apart. And I just don't like how homogenous they feel. Is Rao good? Yes, I think he gives you a lot of play and he gives you options. They protect themselves by coming in with that much loyalty. So when are we going to get some unique feeling planeswalkers? Even if you look at the Golgari Queen, she still kind of feels like plus one extra resource, minus get rid of a problem, level break, win the game. I mean, it's this pattern that is now developing across formerly unique resources that I'm getting a little bit leery about.
Well, it sounds like Sean's angling to have Tybalt the Fiend-Blooded come back in R&D, Harley, because that's definitely not the way that one was designed. You're absolutely right, Sean. I think that's a pretty astute observation about these. And yes, I think that with the colors, there is some certain synergies. And Rao's synergy that I do like is that he does kind of do the Crackling Drake combo with the number of instants and sorceries in your graveyard and in exile. That does show what is it is doing. It's casting a lot of counters. It's casting a lot of burn spells. It's casting a lot of cantrips. And so you are going to be filling up that graveyard. And so I like that the Planeswalker kind of shows that kind of familiarity within those colors. Is it better than Teferi? Absolutely not. Is its -8 ability better than Teferi's -8 ability? No, absolutely not, because it still meets certain conditions, as opposed to you have to have instant or sorcery versus any spell that you can bounce a permanent. And that burn thing can just seem like you're winning more. So I'm curious if Rao would go into as kind of like a combo finisher with more of a Crackling Drake deck, where you would just kind of eschew the Jeskai color and go straight, is it? I feel like that there's probably a deck out there that's probably being tried for those players who can't afford the Teferis, who maybe don't have the mana base to support the white, and it might be a little bit leaner and meaner. You can get Rao on the battlefield a little bit earlier and start plussing.
Rao, is it Viceroy? This week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic. I took a beating from Boros Pants in Dominaria Draft, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast. Sometimes you learn a lesson by doing that. And my continued theory of ignoring sort of creature-based combo decks in Draft really came home to haunt me. And it's being open to that and figuring out if that's an available option. We see that a little bit with the Piston Fist Cyclops Is It decks in the current Guilds of Ravnica draft. So that's one that I like and I have played. So maybe I just need to be a little bit more aware of what those potential synergies are in any format that I'm drafting. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Again, worked with Michael on this bug deck, played through some leagues and got my teeth stomped in, mainly because I played 15 games. I played, and this is not a joke, 7 Boggles matchups, which is not a good matchup. And that's not a realistic view of the format. No, played through the bug deck. I'm going to be doing some streaming this week, and I'm going to be streaming Saturday the modern event or the modern challenge. Yeah, I've been teaching myself a lot, and I've been realizing I screw up a lot more than I think I do. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that. And I misfetch. I take more damage than I should, do a lot of things. But yeah, I mean, playing a lot of modern has really, really taught me a lot. And here soon, in the next couple weeks, I'm about to make the switch over to standard just to get a standard deck knocked out.
Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
There's nothing like playing actual Magic to make you realize that sometimes getting a win under your belt is just, it's such a great feeling that, you know, you're not the stupidest person in the, well, I'll take that back. You're not maybe as stupid as you once thought you were. I'm happy with my kind of brew experiment on this mono blue painter's deck. I feel like I could continue on with it. As few times as I get to play Legacy sometimes I kind of want to have that deck that I can just kind of go to. Sean, you've got Reanimator and on some version Pox always kind of at the ready. Hurley, you can kind of go back to the 12th post deck. I still haven't established, like, what's my tried and true legacy deck that I can always go back to that then keeps me grounded but gives me that kind of brew space to go forward. And I think once I put my hands on that one, I'm going to feel a lot better about my legacy play style. I am still looking for that, and I would love to hear ideas that people have. I've been kind of waffling here for, I'd say, 12, 18 months, and I like all the decks that I play. Maybe they just don't like me as much, and I'm really looking forward to finding that out. Modern, to an extent, is I'm kind of in the same boat, but I feel like it's just so wide open that you can kind of play anything week to week. So really looking for that kind of legacy touchstone deck that's going to kind of keep me grounded moving forward, and had a little bit of help along the way on Sunday moving me toward that.
Hopefully you've got a touchstone that you enjoy each and every week. We're oh so happy you make us part of it. That's this week's episode of Tryhards. Oh, you brave soul. We'll see you back here again next week on Tryhards.